was a man.
There was a man.
Now please take note.
Now please take note.
There was a man.
There was a man.
Who had a goat.
Who had a goat.
He loved that goat.
He loved that goat.
Indeed he did.
Indeed he did.
He loved that goat.
He loved that goat.
Just like a kid.
Just like a kid.
One day that goat.
One day that goat.
Felt frisk and fine.
Felt frisk and fine.
Ate three red shirts.
Ate three red shirts.
Right off the line.
Right off the line.
The man he grabbed,
the man he grabbed,
him by the back,
him by the back,
and tied him to,
and tied him to,
a railroad track,
a railroad track.
Now when that train,
now when that train,
hove into sight,
hove into sight,
that coat grew pale,
that coat grew pale,
and green with fright,
and green with fright.
He heaved a sigh,
he heaved a sigh,
as if in pain,
as if in pain,
coughed up those shirts,
coughed up those shirts,
and flagged the train.
Hey, I'm John Martin of SongsThatSaveYourLife.com. And welcome to Generation Goat. Why Generation Goat? We'll figure that out, but I'd like to introduce my sidekick here.
His sidekick who tried to cut him off, because I am such a glory hog.
Yeah.
I am E. Christopher Clark from GeekForce5.com. And I don't know why we're calling it Generation Goat either, but we'll figure it out. Trust us.
But, you know, what do you do with a podcast that is going to be about, you know, music and geek stuff and, you know, whatever other random thing we decide to throw in there? There really isn't a genre for that, so
Generation except Goat. Goats.
You know, what do you do?
Because, you know, goats like everything. Goats like music, right?
Sorry. Goats will eat anything, and so will goat. We.
Well, I don't know. I am a picky eater, but...
I'm going to draw the line on a few things, too. All right, so we're like city-fied goats, you know, that don't necessarily keep to tradition.
Are we like the Billy Goats? What did the Billy Goats Gruff do? All I know is their name, because it's a memorable name. But
isn't that like a kid's game? Doesn't it involve some sort of... don't you have to like pull on a little girl's beard or something? Is
that might have been the one. There were a couple of girls with beards in Chelmsford, and I think that was because of the inbreeding that went on over in the farms.
Well, you would know. You write about Chelmsford. I haven't been there in quite some time. So
well, yeah, no, I've done quite extensive research, and there were a lot of bearded girls, and I think they just borrowed their father's shaving cream and razors and things. To keep themselves from looking like goats. But if you looked hard enough, you know.
I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome our listeners from Chelmsford and boys and girls.
I'm just kidding. You know, I never noticed that anybody actually looked like a goat.
As John Denver once sang, and I will paraphrase, here's to the dogs of Chelmsford, ladies, I bid you good night. He was singing about the fine city of Toledo. I know this because... from the period of 1980 to 1985, probably the only record that was on every single day in my house was John Denver's Greatest Hits or John Denver Live. So, yeah.
That, sir, is rather frightening.
That or Purple Rain, that was on a lot, or Bruce Springsteen's Live 75 to 85. Those kind of five records, because the Springsteen's a triple, were
right.
On all the time.
Well, but aside from the John Denver, that's not a bad thing to be exposed to on a daily basis, I suppose.
You know, the worst part is, and we might as well just go ahead and get rid of the rest of our listeners right now. I don't mind the John Denver so much. But that's because I'm getting old. I'm turning into an old goat, as you said. And so now...
Hence, we are goats because we are old.
That's right. Very old. Very, very old children.
Are we even allowed to be using technology anymore? Have we gotten to that point?
I got one of my grandkids to set this up for me.
Ah, right.
I should point out for our listeners that I'm 30 years old, so it's kind of amazing.
29.
Yeah, so, yeah. Anyway.
I've been 29 for 3 years.
Nicely done. I think we should probably, for the sake of our first time, because you're all first-time listeners, we're first-time listeners, should probably just talk a little bit about what we do for real.
Yes.
Just so people know they're in the right place and that this isn't going to take a turn. return for the bovine.
Right. Because, wait, bovine cow, what word equivalent
it's
for
okay.
goats?
It's okay. It's an arcane usage. Otherwise, I don't know. Would it be cowbrine? Anyway, let's
yes, you go first. I'd like to hear what you do, because I don't know.
Well, what I don't do is write my dissertation. That's a given. So one of the things I do to avoid writing my dissertation in PhD English land is I work on songs@saveyourlife.com. And it's a, I don't know what it is. It's a place where I wax nostalgic about a variety of songs from my life and songs that are coming up now, which I guess is kind of not nostalgia, just kind of sentimentalizing. But also a place where hopefully people come and they tell us their own stories, and you know, we sing Kumbaya and hang out and have s'mores. Most recently, I've started the 365 Songs Project, which is real simple. Some of you have probably heard of the Flickr 365 days thing, where people are taking a picture every day of something or other and posting that online. This is the same deal, but with mixtapes. Just add a song to the tape on favetape.com, tell the rest of us about it, and then we all get to, you know, hear some new music and have something interesting to play back at New Year's and maybe 10 years from now or whatever. So that's what I do, I guess. Does that sound about like what I do?
It does. It does. I'm really excited about this project because it's one of those things that I've wanted to do in one shape or another. I think it was Cameron Crowe, director that talks about creating it's probably on like the bonus features of the Almost Famous DVD or something. He talks about doing a mixtape a month or something like that to remind him of where he was and what he was listening to each month. And that's been in the back of my head for a couple of years, but I hadn't really thought about it or about doing it until you brought this up, the 365 project, yeah. a couple of days ago or a week ago. And I'm excited about it, and I'm excited to add Debbie Gibson to the list tomorrow.
Nice.
I can't decide whether it'll be Electric Youth or one of the other ones, you know.
Oh, that's tough. You'll have to surprise us. I almost almost added the Escape Club today, but I went with Ramones.
Escape Club, Ramones, Escape Club.
I know, they're so close.
And yet so far away.
I wasn't happy enough for the Escape Club, so it had to be the Ramones.
But you keep the Escape Club in the back of your mind, and maybe eventually it will be Escape Club Day.
You know, it's terrible, because the Escape Club, you know, it's the 60 degrees of separation, really, that music always has, except it's much shorter. And as soon as I hear, of course, Wild Wild West, I'm instantly transported to Roller Kingdom, and and reminded of the humiliation of being unable to roller skate anywhere. I've actually broken my wrist twice while roller skating.
Oh, man, I'm so with you there about not being able to roller skate, but Roller Kingdom, as you know, and the listeners may not know, but as you know, Roller Kingdom holds a very dark and terrible place in my heart. And I actually have a scene in my novel that takes place in Roller Kingdom.
Nice.
Except modern-day Roller Kingdom. In previous drafts, there had been a scene that took place in Roller Kingdom that involved a certain sexual act happening beneath the table, unbeknownst to passersby.
Nice.
Of course, this was not based at all on personal experience. Seriously, this is how
I'm just gonna let you keep talking. It's hilarious.
I was explaining to my students that the way humor works with me is that I just keep piling on the layers of awkwardness until people start laughing.
That's called my life.
So, which I guess all of that brings me to I should say what I do, and
yes.
I work on geekforce5.com, which is a site for talking about the five most important or most awesome things in a geek's life at any particular moment. So every week we change up the topics. I do that so that I don't have to work on my novel, which I've been working on for 5 years or so. And I do it in between teaching two sections I teach one section each of two different classes at Lesley University. Oh, God, I just said the name of the university. And I am not speaking on behalf of my university right now.
Yeah, that's right. We should have the disclaimer, of course. Nothing he says endorses, is in any way endorsed by the university or its subsidiaries.
Right.
Yes, of course. Yes.
Yes. And then I work at another place, and then I do this, and I do that, and I do way too many things to basically keep myself from having to work on that.
So what's a being geeked about at the moment then?
Well, it's funny you should ask that.
Isn't
I'm plotting.
How remarkably impromptu of me.
I am in the middle of planning what next week's Geek Force 5 will be. And actually, the idea for next week's is all based on this article that my friend Marianne sent me about how the current economy is going to make it harder for films like Slumdog Millionaire to be made, and also probably more importantly, or not more importantly, but equally as important, to be distributed. So next week's, or this week's, depending on when we get this produced and when you're listening to this, Geek Force 5 will be revolving around independent artists and in the various things that we cover, movies, video games, comics, independent artists working in those fields and how they're planning to not just get by in this economy, but how they're planning to take advantage of the opportunities this economy is providing. So
cool.
So I'm going to kind of try to do that as an overarching theme this coming week.
Nice.
As sort of a follow-up to the Oscars and to, like, big-name comic book people. Like, everything this past week has been about big names and big dollars and whatever. So wanted to go smaller with this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
So, you know.
So, how does it work coming up with the topics to geek about? Because there's been a change recently in the old website.
That is true. Right now, previously it was really just what I was geeking out about, which was all well and good, but didn't really tap into the potential of the idea. Right now, the way that it works is there's a geek out form on the website that people can that people can throw their ideas into. And a geek out form sounds terrible because the word form just makes people think, I don't want to fill out a form. It's really just a box with another box for your email address and then a little submit button.
This site promotes creative anarchy and a great expression of inner obsession. Please tick all the boxes and make sure not to use more than X number of characters. Yes, I see.
Yes. So it's not really a form. It's kind of just a box. And,
that's right.
And people can drop their ideas in there, and then I look through the ideas that I get every week and try to come up with what the five things that are most popular or most interesting are, or some combination thereof.
Uh-huh.
So It's pretty cool. And then the other big change is try and get more people to contribute, as I know you're trying to do with SongsThatSavedYourLife.com over at Geek Force 5. We're trying to expand the list of authors, because I think people eventually get sick of hearing me talk or write. Or
you get that right. God damn, sir. It's, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah,
I used to think I was shy. And I don't think I'm shy anymore. I think I'm just waiting for the opportunity. It is.
You know, because, I mean, look, listeners, before you came along, we had been going over for about 10 minutes what we were going to call this podcast. I'm not sure we're super happy with the title at the moment. I think we're willing to work with the title and see what it brings to the table. But you know, we, our sentences were, how do we, monosyllabic, really, the way it goes. And it was unimpressive, to say the least. But,
true.
But we have settled on a thing, and actually, you know, we can drag you into a whole other conversation, seeing as I think it's much more interesting what we're talking about anyway. just prior to this podcast, Chris was added as a friend by a very particular fellow on Facebook who almost became the name of our podcast. In fact, this episode is probably going to be called The Amazing Ken Mills Experience. And
it probably is.
Chris, who is this mysterious man?
Well, his name, his last name is Mills, and his first name is Ken, hence the Amazing Ken Mills Experience. Ken Mills lives. I just have to say that.
That's right. This is a, we'll tell you about that in a minute. This is a popular refrain that comes up whenever a person unexpectedly cuts off music that is playing. But we'll
Ken Mills lives. Now I'm just going to do it and cut you off.
Nice.
our old pal Ken Mills added me as a friend on Facebook, like completely out of the blue. I kind of had
not
an idea
into
where
the blue, which
not into the blue
is a whole other Debbie Gibson kind of thing, right?
Yeah and not True Blue, which is a whole Madonna thing.
Cyndi Lauper, you know? As well.
Yeah, that the absolutely,
I think
True Colors or
right
or, Right. So Ken added me, and I, you know, I was vaguely aware that Ken lived like a town or two away from me, and I don't want to. I'm not sure that Ken wants all his information out there on the web or on a podcast.
We'll put so his address up next week. Yeah.
So I won't go into any other particulars about what I discovered about Ken when he, or maybe I will if you let me keep talking long enough. But it was very cool to hear from him, if getting a Facebook friend request is hearing from somebody, and I'm not convinced that it is.
Yeah.
It's really just somebody clicking a bunch of buttons on all the people they used to know. So Ken and John and I were all in a band way back in the day.
Yes, the band.
And we drove around in cars a lot. Often it was either Ken and I were the oldest ones, so we were manning we weren't manning the tape deck. John was usually the one manning the tape deck.
I don't think I would call anything you do manning anything, Mr. Geek, but carry on.
So Ken and I were usually driving, and then it would, every once in a while, see, I knew well enough to let John man the tape deck because John, you know, runs Songs That Save Your Life, is good at creating mixes, and I think I will say he is much better at creating mood with music than I am. So I knew to let well enough alone
also,
and let John handle it.
I'd probably cut you if you took it away from me. So
right. But Ken, I think, would reach his hand in there and change the song. I mean, and he would change songs like in the middle of songs all the time. You'd really get into something or you'd get to that point because it was a song that Ken picked that you weren't really that interested in listening to in the first place. You'd finally get to that point where you're like, all right, I can suffer through this. And then he'd change it.
Ken, it should be pointed out this was often a blessing. I mean, Ken would you know, would put on Gwar or Green Jell-O. If I remember correctly, or Green Jelly, is that it? Ugly Kid
I
Joe
think,
would happen.
Yes, Ugly Kid Joe would
Man
happen.
Manowar. Don't forget Manowar. So it wasn't always bad.
It wasn't always bad, but whenever he did it, we would say, Ken Mills lives.
Ken Mills lives. And even to this day, I haven't seen Ken now since your wedding, I believe. And
yes.
I still, to this day, when driving around in my car and I cut something off, will sort of mutter to myself, "I'm Ken Mills."
Yeah,
and it's
yeah,
it's weird. But
and there was an add-on to that. I don't know if oh my goodness, what the heck was it? In later years, driving around with Ken, when he finally sort of accepted that he was the butt of the joke, I think at some point we added Ken Mills lives and. The million-dollar question is, when will the drama end, or something like that?
Really?
I, Yeah, it became sort of this weird, creepy, self-deprecating thing.
I think this will be probably when you and the rest of the band stop hanging out with me.
Yeah, there was that period, wasn't there?
I should say, by the way, all right, look, since you brought up the band, listening to this podcast, there's a really good chance that you know us, that you're friends of ours, or more specifically, that you were probably made to listen to this by us. So you're probably also the same sorry people that bought our demo tape. And look, okay, look. I know that things were said. I know we said, oh, this is great. It's amazing. There are Learjets right around the corner. But, you know, clearly something was at work. Okay, it was recorded in 13 hours for $666. You know, what are you going to do?
He's not lying, kids.
I'm not lying. I'm actually not lying. And so if you are listening to this and you're one of those sorry people, yes, I owe you $2, okay? I owe you $2. So, you know, we'll set up some sort of hotline, or you can, I guess you can email us through our sites, and we'll get that out to you, okay? I had to say it before, you know, we got too far.
I think everyone feels a lot better now.
I get it off my chest. It's, it's a painful chapter in my life, and if you've ever been through a genocide or a Holocaust, you know what it's like, you know, to be in a high school band like ours. So I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, were there any high school bands that weren't like ours, at least on some level?
You know, I've seen the occasional high school band that can rock, and it's always cover songs, right? Like, you almost never get high school age people writing their own music. Which is interesting, or at least, you know, where we were from. I think we played one concert in Westford, and didn't like five people play the same Gin Blossom song?
they might have.
And I believe our erstwhile guitarist's other band played Angel in a Centerfold. So, and I should point out, kids, that this was like years after the song had been relevant. So.
And not far enough into the future where it became cool to do it as like a tongue-in-cheek cover.
Yes, so, but people in the Westford liked it a lot.
They did.
Which I don't really understand, but I do remember a whole dance floor of people getting really excited. But also, and this is probably telling, it was a whole dance floor of people who also got really excited when the Macarena started. So... So there you are, kids. If you're trying to look up when that show could have happened, just look for the 1 week where the Macarena was acceptable, and bam, that was our show.
That was the week it happened.
It was also the night the band broke up. So
it was, wasn't it? So that was the second show.
That was the second show, and it wasn't the Macarena that broke us up. I don't think.
That was the Macarena was the reason that Ken didn't quit, did he?
No, Ken never quit. We just kind of stopped.
Just kind of stopped.
It's one of those things that happens. You form a high school band, you obsessively drill into people's heads that they have to be perfect all the time, and you yourself never bother to learn to play an instrument or sing. And for some reason, it doesn't work out.
For some reason.
It's unbelievable, especially when you consider that both Fred Durst and Kid Rock are millionaires. I'll tell you what about Kid Rock. It's a funny story, kind of. So today, from the miracle of podcasts, I've managed to surmise that Detroit is probably the worst place to live in America. Because... apparently there are whole city blocks now where people have just left the city. They've lost like half their population. And the average price of a new home is $18,000, which is 1950s pricing, you know?
Yeah.
And Kid Rock, in the midst of all this, wants to put a few hundred people to work at a brewery making Kid Rock beer. Now, look, You know, it's a stupid idea, but he's actually putting more people to work than George Bush. So that
this
counts
is true.
For something. That counts for something.
All I can say
is that I really hope that the beer isn't anything like Motley Brew, which, if you know anything about Motley Brew, has a chemical in it which turns something blue.
Turns what blue?
It turns your urine blue.
Wow.
Yeah. So there you go, kids.
Blue pee.
Yep. And I guess, I mean, if you were... You know what? I'm going to leave that alone. I'm going to stop right there.
Yeah, that's probably a good place to stop.
Yeah. There's actually no good territory to be on there. So there's some Kid Rock news. Apparently doing his little bit to put people back to work. So.
Yeah.
Go.
I wonder what it will taste like. Will it taste like swill or will it taste like... I don't know.
I mean,
would he intentionally make it taste like swill because he's trying to keep it real or something like that?
My guess is it's going to be available in a box. and beyond that, I have no idea. Although, you know, this is the funny thing, because I know people who are wine obsessives. And
I am kind of a wine obsessive.
I had someone the other day trying to convince me that wines from boxes aren't actually all that bad. And I was just thinking, that's clearly the economy talking.
Well, you know, I had actually, you know, Gary Vaynerchuk, the wine guy from Wine Library TV, had done a show on boxed wines, I think, and prior to the economic meltdown, and he was saying that they weren't that bad. So maybe they aren't. I don't know. I mean, here's the thing: $2 Chuck came in a bottle from Trader Joe's, you know, and you would think that would be wonderful. But I'm sure that most people would say that a bottle of $2 Chuck, a box of wine, I'll go with the box of wine.
All right. Okay.
I'm not that much. I did have some wine last night. I'm not that much of an obsessive, but I'm making up for all the drinking I didn't do in college.
Yeah, well, that's a noble goal in itself.
It will probably take me the rest of my life to do that, but considering how much people at Bradford drank.
I had to look up. I had to know. I had
Fred
to know.
Durst.
No, I haven't looked up Mr. Durst yet, but apparently Kid Rock is spending $7 million to create 394 jobs on this beer project, and also will be producing cigars. So, there you go, kids.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. There's a cigar joke waiting there to happen.
I'm moving on.
I'm moving on to what is Fred Durst doing? I think it's my job to look up Fred Durst.
No, I'll do it. You can guess.
I can guess. Okay, Fred Durst right now is surfing that piece of plywood that Trent Reznor said he could surf up Trent's ass back in the day when Fred was the head of Interscope or some division of Interscope. I think Fred's surfing a piece of plywood.
I'm looking it up in the Wikipedia.
Which Am I anywhere close?
Which is the fact of all knowledge. strangely enough, Wikipedia not very, very knowledgeable about the current whereabouts of Mr. Durst, but it does tell us, promisingly, of course, that there is a forthcoming Limp Bizkit album this year. So.
Wow. Now it's it is all about the Nookie, isn't it?
I hate Fred Durst so much.
I actually have, I will admit it, I have a couple of Limp Bizkit songs in my iTunes library. And once upon a time, I did listen to Nookie and Break Stuff pretty obsessively.
You know, what I want you to do, though, is I want you to click over to the Wikipedia page. And you can do this at home, kids. And there's a picture of Fred Durst from a 2008 film festival. Please explain to me how this is the Limp Bizkit guy. Because he looks like one of the ghost hunters. It's kind of shocking. Do you see what I mean?
I see what you mean. What happened? It's because he's not wearing the baseball cap. I think that's what it is.
It's kind of shocking.
It's also because he's 38. My God.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, if you want to have some fun sometime, think about your favorite album and when it was released. And that hit me the other day. According to the Limp Bizkit Wikipedia page, in February 2009, which I guess was, what, 3 years ago, there was confirmed all five members of Limp Bizkit will reunite for a world tour this spring. So...
Oh, that is frightening.
Yeah, you know, things are taking a weird turn. I never saw this podcast as being a platform for either Kid Rock or Fred Durst, but... There
or
we are,
for Kent
kids.
Mills, but you know.
Life takes a strange, strange turn sometimes.
I also have the one single released by Ken Mills Lives, which was I think it was called Ken Mills Lives. It was Ken's solo project.
You know, I never heard that.
I think I'm going to have to include that in the musical portion of.
Can we play that under this? Is that?
I think so. I think I'm going to start playing it right now.
Nice.
I do have it. It was let me see. It was called The Great Race. It was by and it was Ken Mills Lives. That's how he released it.
Is it like a car race or is it like the beginning of a concept album?
You know, I think it's probably a little both.
Wow. people, if you're still listening to this, I don't know why, but if you're still here after what's about to happens. God love you, because no one else will.
No. You know, I'm looking at the little clock thing, and that means we've been talking for like close to half an hour now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 32 minutes.
Yeah, I think was there some rule about like if we talk more than half an hour, does somebody's head explode or do small children die in a foreign country?
It's possible. You know, anything's possible, man. I'm looking at the BBC, and it tells me that the lost city of Atlantis was found and lost in one day. So,
man,
you know, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
All right. So, in the interest of science, shall we experience the Ken Mills experience or?
Yeah, I wonder how we can make that happen. Can we make that happen live so that we can...
We're going to do it.
Here we go.
Magic.
I could start playing it and my microphone might pick it up.
Well, you know what, folks at home? Here's the interesting bit. We're going to pretend that we listen to it right now. I'm going to press pause on the live podcast and we're going to listen to it, and then if it works, we're going to just pick right back up. Don't stare too closely at the curtain, okay? So here comes the pause, and we can talk about you.
Let's start from the beginning.
No, we're good. Ladies and gentlemen, you join us in the Ken Mills Experience in Progress. So how did Ken put this together?
You know, I'm not really 100% sure. He had that fancy-ass keyboard.
Are there vocals?
No, there are not.
All right. Well, we'll just let it play in the background, shall we?
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to have to cue up the Escape Club. So, so Ken Mills, who was in our band... owned a Kurzweil 2000, a very nice keyboard. I have seen Trent Reznor break many such keyboards. And I'm not quite sure how that came about, because Ken had an interesting playing technique. He could turn any song into Van Halen's Jump in three easy steps. It was an interesting bit of music theory, really. It was just kind of like, you know, pivot, modulate, jump. Wherever we were, it became Jump immediately. All right, I think you should come back to us, Chris. Come back to the
list. I'm just enjoying listening to it.
Ladies and gentlemen, I think with that, This will be our first and last podcast.
No, there's nothing wrong with enjoying listening to your old pal's musical stylings.
No,
is
not
there?
At all. Not
no,
at all.
Now, what happens if Ken listens to this? I mean, he's my friend on Facebook now. If he listens to us laughing about his music, it's just, he's not going to be my Facebook friend anymore. And
we're required to make fun of anything and everything.
We are. We kind of made fun of ourselves, too. So, yeah, now we're just going to make fun of Andy and Beth and Jeff.
One could argue that this whole podcast is a subtle exercise in making fun of ourselves.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. One could argue that. Which one of us would do that?
So let's try to bring it back. So I'm poking around the Geek Force 5 at the moment while experiencing Ken Mills. And,
well, it just ended, so we have finished the experience.
Nice. So I'm looking at, and I'm seeing a couple articles, one about the Best Picture speculation coming
yes.
up, and the Dollhouse, the Joss Whedon Dollhouse. What gives, man? What are you liking for the Best Picture? Do you want?
Well, I'm liking The Dark Knight, but it's not nominated.
You think it's just going to be a true dark horse? Whoever's up there presenting is going to be like, you know what? I've never heard of Slumdog Millionaire. I don't care. The Dark Knight.
Yeah, I think that might be it, honestly, you know?
Do you think that would work?
No. Honestly, I think it will be Slumdog. I think it'll be Slumdog because I think that's the sort of picture that the Academy wants to win.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that's what it'll be. It would be nice to see the Academy someday recognize a film that was both popular and critically acclaimed, which is what I think The Dark Knight was.
Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's true. But it seems like that's the exception rather than the rule.
True.
You know? And it took them till the end, and you can almost see it coming that they were going to wait till Return of the King give him the Oscar.
Oh, well, absolutely.
You know? I think Return of the King was probably, I don't know. What do you think? Do you think Return of the King was the strongest of the three?
Oh, hands down. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably the same strategy that undermined George Lucas. I mean, you know, waiting around, Empire's pretty good, Return of the Jedi. Oh, God, Muppets, you know.
Yeah.
Probably where it took a turn.
Now, see, here's the thing. I always hear people, when we criticize, including my old idol, Kevin Smith, there.
Right.
When we criticize Jedi, we criticize it for having a bunch of Muppets. But what I remember Jedi for is the Ewoks. And the Ewoks were like little people. They weren't Muppets, right?
I think some of them had to have been Muppets. I don't know. That's a good question.
I mean, I know like Warwick Davis was inside one of them, I think.
That's
I think he
true.
Was inside.
That's true.
He was
Willa
inside.
Offgood was definitely inside one of them.
Yeah. I mean, so like, but I mean, there were definitely Muppets in the Jabba scene.
Do you like how I just busted out Willow Offgood off the top of my head?
I do like that. You know, that is one of those things that, like, I have broken down on Willow. I've watched Willow finally after years and years of not wanting to.
It has Val Kilmer in it. What are you going to do? You know?
It does. That's one of those films that, like The Princess Bride, which some people know, it is my unholy quest to never watch that film.
Oh, but it's so good.
I want to be the one person on Earth who has never seen it. And
it's so good. You own a CD by Ken Mills. You own Christina Aguilera, and yet you won't watch The Princess Bride.
Hey, you weren't supposed to talk about Christina.
Oy, just
I thought that was in the contract. I'm walking. No.
I don't understand. You were in our band, and yet somehow The Princess Bride is wrong.
No, you know what it is? There were certain films, like The Princess Bride, like Willow, that were like my brother's films, and it's not that I dislike my brother anymore. We didn't get along back in the day, but we get along fine now. I just, like, there were certain things that were his films or like other people's films that, like, I just didn't get into, and I didn't want to get into them. And it's sort of like, what the heck was that conversation I was having with somebody? I have this deep-seated like distrust of the Fox Network that goes back even before like the whole, like, MSNBC versus Fox thing, which is what divides some people now, and the fact that Fox likes to mess with their movies. I have this deep-seated, like, Fox thing. Like, I can't watch a Fox series without feeling a little sleazy. And so I can't watch movies like Willow or The Princess Bride, because I don't know, it stretches way far back. And it's like, those are the movies I walked, you know.
I think you should watch it on the sly. I, on the other hand, I hate Fox News with an unholy passion. That's right, strangely conservative listeners of our weird generation podcast. I don't like your news media. But it's okay, because I'm overseas where all the effete people are. And it's fine. But, you know, I'm watching The 24 with the Kiefer Sutherland, and it's fairly entertaining, if ridiculous. But I think
I have heard that the season has been a nice improvement over some recent ones.
There were some pretty ugly seasons, yeah, in the middle there. Thankfully, the Secretary of Defense has not made his appearance. He was a wonderful character who had the habit of showing up every second or third scene and restating everything that had just happened. It's true, and it was kind of annoying. I'm watching the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which...
Oh, that's one I'm sad that I didn't get from the beginning. I feel like I need to go back and watch that,
you know,
from the beginning.
It's hit or miss, you know, and it really... It's the kind of thing, I think, you know, everybody... I remember, like, going back as far as, you know, T2, everybody was kind of like, oh, God, there has to be more. I want to know more about this world. I want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, this show is this wonderful opportunity to deliver us all this other stuff. They waste a lot of time. I like the show. I'm watching the show, and I'm happy to watch it. But I just wish, for the love of God, that they would just get back to the core mythology once in a while.
Yeah,
I hope it's gonna pay off. I really do, but I'm feeling it's gonna get Studio 60'd on us.
Yeah, do you think that more? And of course, this question is relies on you agreeing that Lost has improved since knowing that there was an end date. But I'll ask the question whether or not you agree with that statement. Do you think that shows having sort of a defined start and end date do better than shows that, like, don't know how long they have to stretch everything out?
Well, probably. I mean, I think that the core example is probably The X-Files, right? Because, you know, that show, you know, easily could have ended after 5 or 6. You know, there's the weird thing, what is it, in season 7, season 8, where they suddenly kill off every single member of their mythology and then decide to keep going.
Right.
You know, that show, it's terrible the way it ended up, because it was so awesome.
We would have parties or get-togethers at Bradford where literally there were dozens and dozens and dozens of people crowded around this small TV set every Sunday to watch X-Files.
I mean, absolutely. It
was huge.
You know, I gave up, I think, after a little bit into season 8, I think. I just kind of, you know, said, okay, well, David Duchovny is not even here.
Right.
They have the T-1000, and that's kind of awesome, but no, you know, no. So, I mean, it probably helps quite a bit, and I think Lost has been doing really well so far this season. I thought the end of this week's episode was particularly interesting. I don't know if we should spoil it for people or not.
Yeah, no, I that's a fine line. You have to determine how fine a line you want to walk with spoilers, because, I mean, you could sort of say spoiler warning, and fast forward the next 5 minutes of the show, but then how do you know how long you're going to talk about
that's
it?
That's right. You might come back in right where we say, and Jack is dead. Can you believe it?
That was a shocking part of the episode. I didn't see that
part coming. I can't believe he died fighting Ben and falling over a waterfall.
We're kidding, folks.
Oh, wait, that was Sherlock Holmes and Moriarty. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's true. Well, next week, all bets are off.
All bets are off.
That's right.
If you haven't seen the episode,
go watch it.
Go watch it before we...
Because
next week's episode, that'll be one to talk about.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk about...
Because that's...
You know, we'll be sitting here and be like, man, everyone who's listened to the podcast has unsubscribed. And they've also sent us hate mail. How is that possible that we've created something that people hate so much?
But dude, if you get hate mail, that means you're doing something right. You're evoking emotions in people.
It's true, but you know, the distance between me and Bill Maher is, you know, slightly greater than I'd like, I think. Alas.
Alas. And alack.
Right.
Where does the alack come from?
The alack? It's just a... Yeah. It's just one of those... I don't know.
I thought you were going to have some brilliant I'm doing a dissertation in English answer for me.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not like I'm looking it up in the Oxford English Dictionary as we speak. No. I can tell you where it comes from. Mr. Smarty Pants.
Mr. Smart Black.
Apparently, it was first noticed in 1480, and a great etymologist of the past, Professor Skate, suggested that it's simply a or o with a northernized, northern Englandized lake. So a lack comes out of that. So there you are. It's there we are.
I learned something new every podcast.
That's right. And also,
and that's the only time I learned something new.
A lack a day, which is very important. And it's in Shakespeare, scene 4, or act 4, scene 5, line 23, she's dead, deceased, she's dead, alack the day. So, there you are, kids, at home.
Wait, which play was that? You said Shakespeare, but not
Romeo and Juliet, sorry.
Oh, yeah.
Act 4, scene 5, line 23. And also...
Oh, Romeo.
Once it was an adverb. Meaning lacking, wanting, or missing.
Wow. An adverb without the ly. Whatever will we do?
It happens now and again. So, so thanks for tuning in to our Geek podcast where we talk about the dictionary. wow.
You have to get to the dictionary. Come on. I mean, you know.
It's true. We would be remiss in our songs and current events podcast if we didn't get to the etymological origins of a lack.
That should be our special like feature. Each week we talk about
That's right, kids. And you should write in with the word that you'd like to hear next week. What will it be?
What will it be?
Do we have any others we should go over before I...
Oh,
I'll tell you what, I did... This is true. I did actually come across one that got me the other day. You know how we as American people have bangs on our head?
Yes.
Well, that's a whole, like, dirty thing overseas. It means something else. And they have a fringe... Well, it turns out that bangs is short for bang tail.
Ha!
And it's 19th century slang, and a bang tail is a horse mane that's been cut level. So there you go.
I did not know that.
It suddenly made me want to use it more once I knew that it was from bang tail.
I should suggest that as a title to some of the adult film stars who I interact with on Twitter.
I try to enrich your life. I try to bring you knowledge. And this is what happens.
See, you're the highbrow and I'm the lowbrow. That's why this podcast is going to go for hundreds and hundreds of episodes, man.
Oh, man, I hope not. But there we are. So, you know, I don't know why I bother. It's about as useful as trying to educate a female cat. All right. Oh. So... I think we've done the Lord's work this week.
I think so.
Anything coming up on your site that you wanna tease us with?
There's something coming up in March. I'm still working on the details, but if you think about March Madness, the NCAA basketball tournament, we might be doing something like that for geeks.
I thought you meant like the slaying of Caesar. Okay.
No, not that. Although if we do it the way that I imagine doing it, there may be some descriptions of slayings of geeks, you know, because there's going to be a smackdown when you put a couple of geeks in a cage.
Two geeks enter, one geek limps out.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, so there might be something like that. How about your site? You got anything cool?
Well, you
know,
before we talk about me, I'd always wondered, you know, yours is Geek Force 5. What is this? Where does this leave you on spazzes and dweebs and nerds?
Spazzes and dweebs and nerds. Well, I have had this conversation before. A geek...
Are they welcome?
They are welcome. They are welcome. But see, the moment that a spaz, a dweeb, or a nerd embraces what they are a spaz, a dweeb, or a nerd about, they become a geek. That's what I think. Because a geek is all about embracing the things that you're absolutely obsessive about. That's what I think.
See, I don't know. See, I would put geek and nerd on one tier. Mm. The spaz and the dweeb.
I guess I see your point.
You know, it's Eloy and Morlocks really is what we're getting at. You know, the geek has become much more acceptable, but has always been somewhat socially awkward and, you know, encumbered by his obsessions, which, tend towards something, non-mainstream.
Right.
Of course, the nerd also lacks social skills, but isn't really obsessive about anything that could be fun. You know, some computer nerd versus, you know, Star Wars geek.
Yes, that's true.
That's my mental dichotomy, but the spaz is just someone who acts stupidly without any social grace in any situation. And then a dweeb...
So people were right when they called me a spaz.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go on,
You heard it here first. And the dweeb, I don't know, to me it's almost synonymous with the spaz, but maybe the dweeb is less actively inept and more passively inept, you know? Mm-hmm. So the guy who, you know, just sits in the corner of the room at gym class and drools, you know, that's the guy.
That's Fred Durst, right?
Yeah, that's Fred Durst. although apparently, again, if you look at that Wikipedia picture, he's also some sort of mogul.
Yes.
Anyway, as for my site, well, we're going to keep rolling with the 365 songs thing. I'm really excited, you know. The site, the traffic for the site in the past 4 days is like, it's exploded. It's amazing. Having some weird things happen to me on Twitter. The musician Pete Yorn came and found me and added me on Twitter.
I think Yorn did that to me too. I think maybe through the same thing.
I don't know how that happened. I don't know where he came from. I don't know what that's all about. But I'm really glad to see that the Facebook group is growing and growing. And it's cool because it shows you like who's been invited by other people but hasn't accepted yet.
Yeah.
The list just keeps getting longer and longer, which is kind of cool. And I've already got one or two people who are gonna write articles for me as a result. So all that stuff is coming down the road.
That's excellent news.
Yeah. So yeah, we're just holding steady and taking it easy, just like the dude.
Yeah, the dude. That's a movie I hadn't seen for ages, and my brother actually he didn't buy it for me, but he got me a Newbery Comics gift card, and I didn't know what to buy, and I saw it sitting there for $10, and I was like, the dude beckons. And
you feel better now?
I do. I could watch that movie at least once a week, maybe twice or three times a week.
For you kids at home, we're talking about The Big Lebowski. That's
The Big Lebowski.
Yeah, go watch it right now.
Yeah, because if you don't watch it, you're not allowed to listen next week.
Run, don't walk. And whatever you do, don't pick up Burn After Reading. Go straight for The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
Wow. It's true. I've gone through like 2 week periods where I've just like put it in the DVD player on repeat. It's true.
And the dude abides.
I always put it on when I'm cleaning.
that's interesting.
It's a little weird. There was literally one day in my life, you know what, fine, where I was alternating The Big Lebowski and Princess Diaries. Now, hang on.
Wait,
bear with me. The Big Lebowski, for obvious reasons.
Right.
It's The Big Lebowski. It's awesome. The Princess Diaries, because I had recently been in San Francisco for the run of Smashing Pumpkins shows at the Fillmore. See, there, now I sound cooler.
Yes, you do.
And that movie was on, it was very strange, it was very meta. It was on the TV while I was in San Francisco, and it, of course, is in San Francisco. And so, you know, it's kind of in the hotel room by myself, and it came on, and I was like, oh, hey, I know that street. I know that other street. And when I came home, I kind of missed San Francisco. So, you know, I downloaded a copy from somewhere, and and I felt like watching it. I don't know.
It had nothing to do with Anne Hathaway?
No.
No?
Just had to do with the fact that I missed San Francisco.
What about Chris O'Donnell in the...
You guys are never coming back.
No, they're going to come back because they want to hear how we're going to humiliate ourselves next time.
It's true. It's true.
People like a train wreck.
No, train wrecks are much more organized. If anybody finds my dignity, you can mail it straight on into the site. There's an address. Chris O'Donnell, you were saying.
Chris O'Donnell in the, I think it's called The Bachelor. I think, and they're running all up and down the streets of San Francisco in brides gowns, wedding gowns.
I have not seen this film.
I am married, and I was dating at around the time it came out or something. And you know, these are things that happen when you're. I'm sure you've been in a relationship for a while now, right? And you could probably.
It's true.
Admit to seeing a few things that you wouldn't have seen prior to being in a relationship.
Well, you know, she doesn't often suggest movies. I'm usually the one who says, "Hey, let's go see this new movie." Although we've got this Netflix thing, well, equivalent Netflix thing, because we're in the UK, and so we have two lists set up and we alternate. So she makes a list and I make a list. And that resulted last time we got Into the Wild.
Okay.
I was very excited to watch. It was very, very good. And The Great Escape, which, you know, is one of those classic films that everybody's supposed to love. And it's, you know, about hijinks in a Nazi camp. And I did not enjoy this film. It was just terrible. And it's 3 hours long. So.
Oh, my lord.
Yeah. But this week... it has resulted in, and you can guess whose is whose, it has resulted in The Incredible Hulk and the BBC version of Jane Eyre.
I will say that you picked the Jane Eyre.
You would be right. Chris knows that I am just way too in touch with my family outside. And so does poor Nora. Now,
I actually really liked The Incredible Hulk. I especially the first 30 minutes or so. Really liked.
I shall report back on my Hulk watching.
Yeah, it was. I think Norton is great in the role, and it's also just. It's one of those things where it's not an origins, like they get the origin out of the way in the credits and then they just move on to the story and move on. And it's got a lot more in common with the 70s TV series than it does, than the previous one did. And I think in terms of a decision, a filmmaking decision, that is really a wise one because I think that's where most people are familiar with the Hulk from. You know?
Yeah, me certainly, yeah.
Yeah. I know more about the Hulk from that show than I did from ever reading the comics, and you know,
we both read comics. It was never a comic I collected.
Yeah, no, me neither.
The Hulk, you know, and She-Hulk, whatever.
Yeah.
So, you know, occasionally the Hulk would pop up in, what, the Infinity War or something, and then
you'd see him.
But, yeah. He's kind of like Silver Surfer in that way, you know, where it's just kind of like, all right.
Yeah.
All right. And I guess, you know, we do try to leave our audience with a sense of, why did we do that? So I think we've achieved that for this time. So
I think you're right.
Any parting words of wisdom?
Don't do drugs.
Okay. And I'll leave you with I Dig Music.
And if you guys get that reference, you're invited back for next time.
All right. See you later.
Catch you later.